but each could be used separately and apart if desired and still form a complete picture in itself, as they were more or less at present, since they were hung between each of the windows. When Ruth had first come to these lands, she had studied the art of tapestry weaving as a profitable occupation and pleasant amusement, and here were hanging the fruits, or some of them at least, of her industry. My friend will doubtless have in mind the kind of tapestries common upon earth, with their rather dull olive greens and browns altogether exhibiting something of a faded look, pleasant enough as suggesting other days and the effects of time upon the fabric. But tapestries of the spirit world are very different. The colors are bright and fresh, clear and glowing, but without being garish. The colors of nature are accurately and minutely reproduced. As we stood gazing upon Ruth's clever handiwork, one could almost forget that we were looking upon woven material, or indeed material of any kind. It seemed as though the walls had disappeared and that we were viewing the actual countryside. As the light came through the stained glass at the upper sections of the windows, the whole chamber was bathed in the most exquisite tints and blends of color. Here was an effect that is not possible upon earth, for the shafts of colored light stream from all three directions at once, forming a perfect blend in the middle of the apartment. And so, to bring this account to an end, which I fancy has already been far too protracted, was a new room added to the house. An extremely small event in an extremely large world, but I give it that you may see how life deals with us here in these particular realms, and to provide you with some idea of what lies before you in pleasurable enjoyment and contentment of mind when it so happens that you, my friends, will come to join us in these lands. What I have told you in the preceding account is but a commonplace incident in lives that are, however, anything but commonplace. For if these realms of which I speak were to appear commonplace to us, we should soon betake ourselves to other parts, or energetically earn the right to do so. Never for one moment, since I became an inhabitant of the spirit world, have I found the time to drag, as you would say. Never have I been at a loose end for somewhat to do, never have I been bored with circumstances. Life, indeed, is full to the brim with activities of many kinds. Truly can I say that I have never worked so hard in my life since I came to live in the spirit world. I always thought I could do a good day's work when I was on earth, and indeed, my friends there all declared that it was overwork that finally took me off the earth altogether. The truth is that it is not only an increase in our labors here of which we are sensible, but the capacity and energy for increased output, to use your present idiom, that seem illimitable. And as the work remains to be done well, we just do it. Now, as I promised at the beginning, to the changes that have taken place in these realms themselves. Such changes that have occurred are not sensational, for we have undergone no great upheavals such as you have on earth. You cannot pass through the trials and tribulations of two great wars without many corresponding changes taking place. With us, of course, it is utterly different. Life here goes on placidly, without interruption or interference. Nothing can upset our economy, under which term I would designate the whole immense organization of these realms, so that as we pass our lives here we see houses built, and houses being removed, not in large numbers, but here and there as the circumstances demand. Were we a world that had only itself to consider, were we completely shut off from earth, the case would be different, perhaps. But my friends will remember that every soul that lives upon earth must eventually come for all time into spirit land. During normal times upon earth, the many organizations in the spirit world are fully capable of dealing with the usual influx of folk into these lands. But bethink you what happens when universal war breaks out on earth and people pass to us not in hundreds of thousands but in tens of millions. The normal influx becomes a torrent. There is no real need for us each, individually, to work harder, for there are so many eager and willing to augment our usual numbers as to allow for all contingencies. But while we ourselves can be supplemented in our services without any strain being placed upon the community of these realms, the homes of rest, as they exist and function during normal terrestrial conditions, become totally inadequate. For you will know that most folk, as they come here at their dissolution, need rest in more or less degree according to the circumstances and manner of their passing. The period of rest varies from what would be a few days to what would be a few months, if we were to judge such things by earthly computations. For example, my own passing was not attended by any distressing conditions. Distressing, that is, to myself, and so my period of rest was exceedingly brief. But the thousands upon thousands whose dissolution is caused by war are an altogether different case. They have frequently undergone a severe shock. They have, in every sense of the term, been projected into the spirit world, and that is an irregularity for the spirit body itself. It was not meant to do that, but to pass naturally and gently into these lands. The earth, officially, thinks and believes that once a person has died, then there is nothing more to be done. I am not considering now, of course, such beliefs as prayers for the dead and so on. Wars kill off people in their thousands, and they have passed out of sight of the full majority of incarnate man. Later on, I shall have a few more words to speak to you upon this important aspect of the subject. For the present, it devolves upon us in the spirit world to care for all these millions of souls, tens of millions of souls, who have come to us prematurely, before they have lived their normal span of years upon Earth. Needless to remind you that the spirit world does not fail humanity. When your wars commence upon Earth, the word is given to us that new homes of rest must be built in readiness for the hideous slaughter that is to take place. Spaces are vast here, so there is no lack of room in which to build the most beautiful homes of rest, where, in addition to those already existing, the tortured mind and the riven body may regain their calm, and become rested and reinvigorated. Such buildings as these, and the demand has been for many of them, are built rapidly, but they emit nothing. When the use for them dwindles and finally ceases, they are removed, but temporary though they may be, nothing is forgotten or omitted that will make the buildings themselves beautiful and their efficiency of the highest. Transient as they are, they must not be roughly put up. They must accord in every detail with the permanent beauties of these realms. That is the great change that takes place among us, my friends. Sensational, no, vital and urgent, yes. Would that it were never necessary. For here are we rectifying the colossal blunders of the earth people. But just so long as man in his abysmal folly tolerates wars, then just so long will it be necessary for us to erect these great new homes of rest for the dwellers of earth who have been driven forth from their earthly lives into the spirit world through the wicked acts of man. Recently, we have seen the removal of numbers of these rest homes. We are not sorry to see them go forward with their departure. It means that the need for them has departed too, and that gives us good cause for great joy. When I tell you that otherwise there are no changes for me to note, you must not infer that we have got into a groove, so to speak, that we are behind the times or that we are perfectly content to go on in the same old way, and that therefore our lives must be one unending, dreary monotony. That is most certainly not the case. We are intensely alive, joyfully happy, always occupied upon something useful to our neighbors, and as for being behind the times, why, it is you who are that, for we are ahead of them, always ahead of them, as you will experience for yourself one of these days. Then you will see that I have not overstated the case, but most decidedly understated it. Past, present, future. A subject that exercises many wise minds is that of the past, the present, and the future, as regarded from the earthly point of view. It is sometimes asked at what precise moment does the present become the past, and similarly, when does the future become the present? Some will liken a person's life upon earth to a pencil drawn across a sheet of paper, the black line left by the pencil being the past, the point of the pencil in contact with the paper, the immediate present, while the blank page before it is the future. What I think is of most importance to us now is the view held by many that the spirit world, having no cognizance of time, measured or otherwise, as it is supposed, The present and the past are one. One cannot but feel sympathy with this conception when one recalls the generally accepted idea of heaven, where the company of the blessed, the angels and saints, are doomed, and I am persuaded that is the right word to use, to spend the whole of eternity singing hymns and other spiritual songs. In such case the past would be indistinguishable from the present, one would imagine, while the future, a bleak outlook, would promise not the slightest difference from either the present or the past. However, we have something more substantial upon which to deliberate, and that is our memory, a function of the mind which would be of precious little value in an eternity of such vocalistic efforts as I have just noted. Those of us in the spirit world who have lived upon earth have a full and complete memory of all that transpired with us when we were incarnate. That memory is perfect. All the events and experiences of our lives, our thoughts and deeds, are infallibly and indelibly impressed upon the tablets of the mind. But that is not to say that in our lives here we are constantly in the presence, as it were, of our whole earthly lives, that we are haunted by the whole immense contents of our memories. Life under such conditions would become a veritable nightmare, and our heavens would instantly be transformed into hells. Our minds would be a complete phantasmagoria of thoughts and ideas, with the remembrance of an uncountable series of events of the most heterogeneous order, the trivial being intermixed with the important. No, my friends, things are much better ordered than that. Our memories are tenacious and exact, but we are not everlastingly beset by the whole contents of our minds. We can delve into the past as we wish. If we have done those things on earth which we have later come to regret when we are permanent residents of these lands and so retarded our progress, then we shall have no reluctance to recall then that, by our present deeds, we may offset those unhappy incidents. But, it may be asked, if we have no time in the spirit world, how can there be a past as it is understood on earth? One, it is true we have no night, but eternal day, no winter, but perpetual summer. We have no measurement of time by means of clocks and calendars. Life is therefore a continuous, literally continuous, succession of existence, and that you might feel inclined to say, is all that there is to be said about it. No past, no future, but one eternal ever-present now. Let us see if the no past is really a true statement, though I must remind you that we have cognizance of the passage of time. When I first spoke to you, it was some years ago. You know that, and so do I. To me in these realms it is in the past, and to me it was and still is, a most memorable event. It enabled me to set right something that I ought never to have done when I was incarnate. Am I not forever grateful for the opportunity of so doing? Indeed, I am. Nor am I, as far as I can foretell, ever likely to forget that past event. How does it present itself to me, this memory of the past? Why, in exactly the same way as does your memory presents its past to you. As far as my memory is concerned, I can say, and this is essentially a personal experience, that I detect no difference whatever between my memory functions when I was incarnate and my memory functions now that I have resided in the spirit world all these years of your measured time. With the actual contents of the memory we are not precisely concerned at the moment. Since I have been in these lands, a multiplicity of events have happened to me, as to all the other folk here. They have happened, they are past, though all the particulars of them are readily capable of being recalled to the mind, recollected, upon the instant. Most emphatically, they are not of the present with me any more than the actions which you performed or the experiences which you underwent yesterday are present with you today, other than as a memory. The effect of those actions and experiences may, of course, abide with you for a long time, but that is another matter altogether. As I look back over the past since my advent here, I can recall all manner of the most pleasant things, occurrences, experiences, and so on. So clearly can I recall them that a few years ago we recorded some of them, even as we are now recording this for you. In writing them down, I used the past tense, not only because from your point of view they were in the past, but because from my point of view also were they in the past. death? The spirit teachers say, there is no death. What seems so is but a transition to another world, and life is continuous, without break. Death is a mere discarding of the physical body. That is a spiritual truth. A continuity of life, and most decidedly a continuity of memory. Where there is memory, there is past. Of what use memory if there were no past to remember? History is comprised of events and the people concerned in or with them. Events of a national character will be set down in the earth's chronicles. The events themselves are past, though their repercussions may extend a long way in time until you feel or observe them in these present days. By reading of these events you can bring them before the mind's eye, and the descriptive powers of the writer may be able to afford you some insight into the principal characters involved in them. That a great deal of inaccuracy has become interwoven with the historical narratives is only to be expected. The absolute truths of history are only to be found within the libraries of the spirit world. In the city, which I can see from my windows here, I have in leisure moments browsed among volumes of history. My interest is not entirely idle, because when I was a writer on earth I sometimes used the events of history as the main theme for a book. The history I introduced was as accurate as it was possible to have it, and according to the standard works upon the subject. For the rest I drew upon my imagination in the purely fictional parts of my work with the historical minutiae to give some substance of verisimilitude. Sometimes when I have dipped into the history books in the city library I have been amazed to read for the first time the true account of particular events, some of them actually narrated by the leading participants. This, however, is by the way. All you have upon earth are the chronicles of the world's events. But here in the spirit world are existing all the persons, great and small, famous and infamous, good and bad, male and female, who are but names, and name only, to you still incarnate. They are widely dispersed throughout this world, some in the heights, others are still languishing deep in the depths, and who, from my own observations, seem likely to remain there for heaven alone knows how much longer. All your ancestors, my friends, are here somewhere. It is nothing, therefore, during the course of one's days here, I use that phrase metaphorically, and you will understand literally to encounter someone who dwelt upon earth. Many, many years ago, in times which are now regarded as historical by the incarnate, I have had a number of very pleasant experiences in this way. My musical interests have led me into most delightful company among master musicians, some of whom flourished in early times and others of more recent days. The musicians, like other crafts in these lands, have formed a society of themselves, a very ancient one, to which new members are added from time to time, although the entrance of master musicians from the earth world has perceptibly dwindled. With a number of the master musicians I have been closely associated, a case of wheels within wheels. Many have been the delectable foregatherings which we have had at my house. Here were to be seen, and spoken with, musicians of different ages of the earth's history. A sort of fusion of the past with the present. There was no mistake about the past, though. These good men have all of them somewhat to relate of their earthly lives. One of the most interesting links with the past, interesting, at least, to me, is connected with my house. You must know that its counterpart on earth is an ancient domicile, retreating into the historical times of the land. Imagine my surprise when a most genial man presented himself to me as a former owner of the very house in which I lived on earth, when the building itself was young, in years. He had seen my present house here in course of erection, and though the materials of which it is constructed differ widely from earthly materials, yet there was something about it that seemed familiar to him. An exchange of information proved him right, and nothing would satisfy him but that I should show him over the whole house. I was happy to do so, in exchange for which he gave me some personal details about himself, and made some observations upon the times in which he lived. Now it may be asked, if the earthly counterpart of my house is historically old, why has it been left to me to possess a similar house in the spirit world? What of the desires of the tenants or owners previous my tenure of it? Privilege of some sort? Indeed, no. The answer is simply that the preceding tenants or owners of the earthly house had no wish for a spirit work counterpart when they came here to live. Assuming that right to possess, there was nothing whatever to debar them, even if all of them had been of like mind, and all had decided to erect similar houses for themselves. It means that there would have been a number of houses of identical pattern instead of just the one in which I am dwelling. Their particular taste in a home for themselves had altered. It had merely transpired that way. The interest which the former owner has expressed in my house is therefore purely a passing one. He has admired it, of course, for the vivid contrast it presents to its earthly shadow. To refer to a solid house of bricks and plaster as a shadow may raise a smile upon your face, but I assure you that to me now, my present house is far more substantial than even my earthly one was when I was actually living in it. How often are the questions asked upon earth, do ghosts exist, and have you ever seen one? We can answer that for you. Yes, ghosts do exist, and you are they. We have seen you. However, we seem to be getting off our true course, and I must restrain my fatal habit of digressing. This previous owner of my earthly house often calls to see us, and we have fallen to discussing the times in which he lived. There is something extremely pleasant in chatting with a man who lived in a bygone age, when life was simpler, but in many respects more hazardous. My friend had found that the safest way of securing his tenure of earthly life to its fullest extent was studiously to refrain from airing his opinions except upon matters that were, manifestly innocuous, such as music and the arts of agriculture and kindred subjects, and to leave religion and politics resolutely alone. He found it healthier for his mind's sake to leave the cities and towns unvisited, or to make such visits as were unavoidable as brief as possible, and to remain in their country places and attend to his own affairs. Thus he was able to preserve not only his peace of mind, but his earthly life as well. How much blood was unnecessarily shed in the cause of politics and religion, the history books amply reveal. As each party came into power, it was responsible for the production of martyrs to the faith upon the opposite side. Had the truth been known in those days, the martyrs of religion would have also known that they were sacrificing their earthly lives in a mistaken cause, and so saved themselves. But surely, it will be queried, a man who gives up his earthly life for his faith, whatever that faith may be and however mistaken, cannot have thrown his life away? He must have reaped some benefit of spiritual value. Now who would you think to be the best judge of that? Wishing for an answer to this question, my friend and I sought and interrogated one who is still revered upon earth as a martyr and has since been elevated to sainthood, preferment which he refuses to accept. In the light of spiritual verity, he says, he was wholly mistaken. By refusing to subscribe to certain enactments, both religious and political, which by tyrannous means were being forced upon the people, he forfeited his earthly life. It was, in fact, an encroachment of the law into matters where it had no right to be, and the law in those days, in such cases, meant the head of the state. It was not that he was fighting for freedom in a general sense but for another religious system, which he believed to be the only and true one, but which, after his entry into spirit lands, he discovered was not true by any means. He had, indeed, supported a false cause. He thought he was grasping the substance only to find that it was a shadow. The articles to which he was ordered to subscribe his name were the outcome of political expediency, and the very religion which they opposed were false. The role of martyr for the faith is a profitless and thankless one as seen by the light of spirit truths and spirit laws. Whatever may be the opinions of my earthly friends upon such things, there are always the pronounced views of the person chiefly concerned, the martyr himself to be considered. If he expresses the view that he made a useless and needless sacrifice, who shall gainsay him in the light of spiritual verity? If our eyes are firmly shut, we may blunder badly, or imagine ourselves to be in deadly peril where we tread, only to find upon opening our eyes that we are, figuratively speaking, in open country far from any obstacle likely to cause us accident. But surely, it may still be counted, there would be some compensation for the suffering which that person endured. Of course. But that is another matter entirely. Homes of rest have not sprung up in these lands during the last few years only. They have existed time out of mind. And many a martyr of ages past has found himself safely within the shelter of one of them after his turbulent passing. His intentions were of the best, but his views were mistaken, and in sacrificing himself for an empty cause he gains no spiritual reward in the shape of a heavenly crown, such as the devout like to believe is the case, but insofar as he lived a good life in the service of others, his violent and premature advent into spirit lands would receive ample compensation, while he would reap the good harvest which he sowed upon earth. One must always remember too, as my friendly informant of other days pointed out to me, that, generally speaking, feelings ran higher in those days. There was a certain measure of stubbornness not to be perceived in these later times, while fanaticism was taken at its word, so to speak, and given the chance to prove itself. It did so in the form of martyrdom. The minds of people were in many respects only partly formed, they were superstitious to a degree, and utterly incapable of distinguishing a very ordinary natural happening from some alleged supernatural manifestation. On so many occasions such folk precipitated themselves into inextricable difficulties by what would be regarded in these wiser times as sheer stupidity. As for those who were in direct communication with us here, their position was parlous indeed, for any thought of intercourse with their dead was simply an abomination, since it was taught and believed that the good people in heaven would not dream of such wicked practices as being against holy writ, a notion which has its partisans to this day, so that it was only left to the devils out of hell, which one must avoid like the plague. Some indeed had the courage to speak the truth, but the flames of the stake soon stifled their blasphemous and heretical utterances. You have much to be thankful for, my good friends, in these present times, the dreadful pains you have undergone notwithstanding. However, let us not dwell over long in the past, but turn to the future. Mercifully, you would perhaps say, the future is a closed book. If the whole were to be thrown open for all to see, many would predict that chaos would prevail. Yet one hears of numerous cases where the future has been accurately predicted. How does that come about? 2. First, I would like to observe how strange it is that such great importance should be attached to any predictive utterances that may emanate from the spirit world. It so often happens that more weight is attached to this particular type of communication than many another, if the prediction should be completely fulfilled. It would appear to establish the speaker's bona fides in a remarkable way. Any spirit person, in effect, who correctly predicts a certain event, whether of personal or public application, seems at once to have proved himself reliable, accurate, and altogether a desirable person. The opposite, of course, is an abomination, a deceiver, an impersonator of good, but an impostor, or what is worst of all, a devil. That would make the good people from the spirit world infallible, a distinction which we beg leave to disclaim utterly. Conversely, if we err in some statement, then we are evil, which is equally untrue. If we have no measurement of time in the spirit world, how can we speak of the future and give any substance to our words? Yet we have a future before us, as you will have gathered from what I have said to you in these and other writings, for how can spiritual progression have any meaning whatsoever if there be no future in which to gain it? Those unhappy souls in the lowest realms of darkness whose numbers have been so increased of late years, all those creatures of misery have a future before them. Time for them has stood still, seemingly, since the moment of their entry into those noisome regions. Time is of no account to them whatever. Some of them have been in that state for hundreds of years. But every soul there, no matter how debased he may be, no matter how low he has sunk, can lift himself out of his misery, and will ultimately do so, though it may take eons of time in the process. But the future lies before each single soul in darkness, as it does before us all, and in that future lies also the potentiality of rising to the greatest heights. What are the limits to spiritual progression? There is none here who would dare to hazard a guess. The conception that we live in an eternal present is a wrong one. We all of us help for the future.